suppliers and manufacturers are
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
El derecho de vivir.
China es el lugar, más allá del ancho mar, donde revientan la flor con genocidio y napalm. La luna es una explosión que funde todo el clamor, el derecho de vivir en paz. Di ojo nuestra canción, que es fuego de puro amor, es palomo palomar, olivo del olivar, es el canto universal, cadena que hará triunfar el derecho de vivir en paz. La 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 la.
You're listening to Back in the USSR on 93.3 FM CFRU. This is Siegfried, and that was Victor Jara with El Derecho de Vivir en Paz, the right to live in peace. And of course, Victor Jara was a communist singer-songwriter from the 1960s and 1970s, gave his life fighting against the Pinochet dictatorship in 1973. And he's a man that I admire and respect greatly. And of course, I've played his music quite a few times on the show, and I'm going to play some more for you tonight. But tonight, I want to draw attention, brothers and sisters, to a crime of massive proportions that has been unleashed upon the population of a majority indigenous nation at the heart of the land of the Condor, South America. I want to talk about the violent overthrow of the first ever indigenous president anywhere in the Americas, and the brutalization of his people by monsters. And I want to talk about how the same people, long oppressed by colonizers and imperialists beyond their borders, are fighting back and resisting en masse in the streets and in the countryside against the fascistic forces trying to crush them, along with their way of life and hard-won freedoms. Brothers and sisters, I want to talk about what has been happening in the country Bolivia and explain to you why Evo Morales, a man of the indigenous Aymara nation and deposed president of Bolivia, who is now living in exile in Mexico, why he stated last week that, quote, dictatorship has returned to Bolivia. Dictatorship has returned to Bolivia. And why Nick Estes of The Guardian, himself of the Lower Brule Sioux Nation, described Evo Morales' overthrow by U.S.-backed forces as, quote, a coup against indigenous people. A coup against indigenous people. Upwards of 90% of the Bolivian population is indigenous. And, as I intend to make clear, the coup plotters who have taken over the country, with the support of countries like Canada, do not represent them and have nothing on their agenda but colonialism and racist violence. Racist violence that they are unleashing in the streets every day as the indigenous population of Bolivia fights back and resists them in their attempt at takeover. But first of all, I'd like to tell you something that you don't know. I've never mentioned this on the show before, to my knowledge, and it rarely comes up in conversation. But in November 2010, I helped to organize a conference at the University of Guelph entitled Canada-Bolivia Relations in the Next Decade, which included the former Bolivian Minister of Agriculture, Hugo Salvatierra Gutierrez, as a keynote speaker. We had several other speakers too that day. Judy Rebick of Rabble.ca was one of them. And I was part of a Bolivia solidarity organization at the time on the U of G campus, which was largely responsible for putting on this event. And although that organization was very short-lived, and that conference in late 2010 was really the only major event we ever did, it was still a real turning point for me. It was really the first time that I'd engaged in that kind of international solidarity work. And I remember meeting Hugo face-to-face, having coffee with him and the other organizers at the Second Cup over on Gordon and College. And he talked about the progressive gains that had been won by the people of Bolivia since the election of Evo Morales as president in 2006, you know, especially the gains won by the indigenous population. And at the end of our conversation, I wished him good luck in French, you know, wished him bonne chance, you know, seeing that he didn't speak English and I didn't speak Spanish, and French was the only other language that we both somewhat understood. And to be honest, as events unfold in Bolivia right now, I have no idea where Hugo is or if he's safe, if he's in the country or not. You know, that man I wished good luck all those years ago as he went back to his own country and continued the struggle for socialism in Bolivia, I don't know what happened to him. So what's going on in Bolivia now, which threatens to destroy all that has been built in that country over the last 13 years, has a personal dimension for me and is particularly important to me. Evo Morales was basically a peasant before he became president of Bolivia. He was a humble coca farmer, a longtime trade unionist, and when he was elected president in 2006, propelled into office by powerful indigenous social movements that had long been fighting against neoliberalism and attempts by previous administrations to violently impose the most ruthless form of capitalism on the Bolivian people. From these movements emerged an indigenous vision of socialism, in which radical leftist ideas merged with the values of Pachamama, the indigenous earth goddess of the Andes. And once in power, the indigenous-led movement for socialism, MAS, which is Evo Morales' political party, nationalized key industries, turned back the tide of privatization, and set up social and Medicare programs that reduced extreme poverty by more than half, and lowered Bolivia's Gini coefficient, which is the international standard measurement of income inequality, by 19%, which is not trivial. He made his country much more equal compared to what it was. And for the first time, most of the indigenous population of Bolivia was able to emerge from poverty and had access to free healthcare and education for the first time ever. I mean, Cuba, you know, which is one of the greatest healthcare systems in the world, public healthcare systems in the world, Cuba assisted Bolivia in its massive expansion of public healthcare and the quality and scope of healthcare, dispatching hundreds of, you know, just like Cuba did with Venezuela, dispatching hundreds of doctors and health professionals to the country over the years. you know, all of whom were detained or expelled by the new right-wing government following the November 2019 coup, which put tremendous strain on the healthcare system and, you know, is putting immense strain on it now as the victims of violence, of the violence going on in Bolivia now, are just flooding the hospitals and there aren't enough, like, people to treat them because all the Cubans have been expelled. So Evo Morales won major gains in healthcare, you know, social programs, in income equality, all these things for the people of Bolivia. But there were other impressive victories and achievements as well. During the presidency of Evo Morales, Bolivia made what Nick Estes called a great leap forward in indigenous rights by adopting a plurinational model of governance for the whole country. And by doing that, basically what he was doing is he was bringing the various indigenous nations, giving them equality for the first time, giving them status as nations within the country, and recognizing all those different nations and their autonomy and their self-determination for the first time ever. You know, for the first time ever since 500 years ago when Bolivia was first colonized by the Spanish Empire anyway. I mean, once confined to the margins of a deeply racist colonial society, indigenous languages and culture became an integral part of the nation. The indigenous concept of bien vivir, which promotes living in harmony with one another and with the natural world, was written into the country's constitution under Evo Morales. And the Wifala, the indigenous multicolored flag, became an official national flag. While the 36 indigenous languages became official languages alongside Spanish. I mean, compare that with what the situation is in Canada, where none of the indigenous languages have actual standing as official languages in this country. And we certainly have nowhere near that kind of equality for indigenous nations, and nowhere near that kind of autonomy or self-determination. All that was done under the presidency of Evo Morales. Evo Morales and the mass political movement that he led did what capitalism has no intention of doing anywhere in the world, redistributing wealth to the poorest and the most oppressed people in society, while uplifting and empowering those who are the most marginalized in society. He nationalized the country's natural gas reserves using the money on social programs for the people. Just prior to the coup in 2019, he was moving to nationalize Bolivia's vast lithium reserves. And lithium is a key component in electric cars and in batteries. You know, and he was moving to ensure that the money from that industry, that booming industry which is going on right now with green technology, would benefit the Bolivian people rather than the multinational corporations. And as a side note, unsurprisingly, since the coup took place this month, Tesla, the company Tesla, their stock prices just skyrocketed. Because now that Evo Morales is gone, the multinational corporations like Tesla think they can go in and take whatever they want. That the coup government, the right-wing coup government, which is just coming in, is just going to give them everything they want, sell off the resources of their country at just bargain basement prices. That's what they're hoping. That's why their stock price is going up. After he was forced from office last week by the Bolivian military and forced into exile in Mexico, Evo Morales said, quote, "My sin was being indigenous, leftist, and anti-imperialist." Just think about that. My sin was being indigenous, leftist, and anti-imperialist. So when Jeanine Añez, the right-wing opposition senator who was unlawfully proclaimed president after the coup, publicly said, quote, "I dream of a Bolivia free of satanic indigenous rights and that the city is not for Indians who should stay in the highlands or in the Chaco." Basically saying that, you know, indigenous people had no place in the capital city or in any of the cities, and they should just, like, leave, go back to the hinterlands, and they have no place in government. Government should be left to white people. That's basically what this incoming president, quote unquote, if you know, who has no legal standing whatsoever, who came in on the back of a coup. That's what they're saying about indigenous people. It's racist language. You know, the language of colonialism. But when she says that, it should surprise no one. You know, after Evo Morales said one of the reasons he was overthrown was because he is indigenous, leftist, and anti-imperialist. Jeanine Añez declared herself interim president while holding up a large Bible. You know, proclaiming that she was doing this on behalf of God and taking the country back for Christ, you know, and away from the indigenous pagans or whatever it is she saw as, you know, indigenous people as being. And she did all this while, even though she failed to get the required quorum in the Senate to lawfully gain the title of interim president, she claimed it anyway. But that didn't stop the United States, the EU, and Canada from recognizing her. And the coup government, which came in and expelled Evo Morales, overthrew an elected president, and took control by force. So therefore, the United States, the EU, and Canada basically gave their blessing to the coup and to the carnage that's followed the coup. And by the way, while this woman, Añez, was being illegally sworn in as the interim president of Bolivia after the overthrow of the lawfully elected president by the military, a man named Luis Fernando Camacho was standing next to her. Camacho is a leader of the Christian far right in Bolivia. Camacho is part of a neo-Nazi paramilitary group that wears the Iron Cross and other fascist regalia and, you know, practices the Roman straight arm salute, you know, like that Nazi salute. His group does that. And that group was also, that neo-Nazi paramilitary group was instrumental in organizing fascist mobs and racist death squads to terrorize the supporters of Evo Morales in the streets, along with anyone who looked remotely indigenous. After the coup, Camacho stormed the presidential palace, Bible in hand, conveying a blatantly anti-indigenous and racist message that, quote, Pachamama will never return. Today, Christ is returning to the government palace. Bolivia is for Christ. So the leaders of this coup in Bolivia and their supporters brutally displayed the racist colonialism of their politics from the start. And basically came in saying, like, they want to take over Bolivia for the settlers, for the European, people of European descent in Bolivia, which constitute less than 10% of the population. And they want to exclude indigenous people from politics entirely and drive them back to the margins of society and keep them oppressed and confined. That's the kind of society they want. And they made absolutely no secret about it. When these right-wing groups went into the streets at the start of the coup, the indigenous Wafala flags, which are symbols of indigenous pride and which have the same official status as the national flag of Bolivia, were lowered and burned. Police officers cut the Wafala from their uniforms and joined the fascist street violence against indigenous people and government supporters. And one of the real major events of this coup was when the police basically defected to the opposition. You know, they joined the fascist right-wing demonstrators who were trying to overthrow Evo Morales and were, like, you know, burning everything and attacking indigenous people and, like, engaged in all sorts of, like, criminal acts and atrocities. The police joined them. You know, and tore the indigenous symbol off their uniform and showed their true colors. The houses of Evo Morales' supporters were burned. The members of his party, they were attacked and burned. Evo Morales' home itself was ransacked. Masked, armed men began rounding up suspected government supporters and indigenous people in the streets, loading them into the backs of trucks. Indigenous peoples demonstrating in the streets in support of Evo Morales, who of course remains the democratically elected president of the country, have been met by lethal force by the police. Who have now been officially exempted from all criminal prosecution by the coup regime and are free to kill or brutalize whoever they want in the name of law and order. The death toll currently stands at 23 as of November 18, with hundreds of injuries and thousands of arrests. The full scope of the armed forces has been unleashed on the demonstrators. Those people who are in the streets demonstrating for Evo Morales' return, the armed forces are attacking them, with security forces using live ammunition, tanks, and even attack helicopters to destroy resistance to the coup. And neither the Western media nor major human rights organizations like Amnesty International or Human Rights Watch have acknowledged these massacres going on in Bolivia. The media downplays and mischaracterizes them as, quote, clashes. While Human Rights Watch even praised, the leader of Human Rights Watch even praised the coup on Twitter for supposedly defending democracy. How's that for grotesque? You know, indigenous people are getting shot down, you know, brutalized, killed in the streets. You know, this clown who leads Human Rights Watch is, you know, saying that, you know, the military and police that are serving the coup regime and are driven by this right-wing colonial racist agenda are somehow defending democracy. It's a travesty. But even the cold-blooded massacre of nine indigenous people by the military last Friday in the city of Cochabamba, and police repeatedly using live ammunition against crowds of indigenous demonstrators, hasn't stopped more and more people from coming into the streets in Bolivia to resist the coup, to demand that Evo Morales, the lawfully elected president, is put back in office. And the same social movements that ushered Evo and MAS, the MAS political party, into power, have taken to the streets again to defend the gains of their indigenous revolution. And of course, I should talk about the election which took place last month in Bolivia. All of this happened, this entire coup has happened in the wake of the October 20th elections in Bolivia, in which Evo Morales was re-elected for a fourth term as president by the considerable margin of 10 percentage points over his nearest rival, the neoliberal former president Carlos Mesa. And the numbers actually were 47.8% versus 36.5%, according to the official vote count. The right wing immediately cried fraud in this election, just like they did in Venezuela, just like they've done like basically everywhere where there's a leftist government in power. The right wing immediately cried fraud, but no evidence of electoral fraud ever emerged, and still has not emerged. The Organization of American States, the OAS, which is led by the notoriously right-wing and pro-US Luis Almagro, cited, quote, irregularities in the vote without providing documentation. You know, just providing no evidence whatsoever, just accusing fraud without providing any evidence whatsoever. And certainly the racist right wing in Bolivia, who's been waiting for years to try to overthrow this indigenous president in that country, they didn't wait for any evidence of fraud before going on their murderous rampage and like attacking indigenous people in the streets and beating government supporters to death and setting buildings on fire and all that. They didn't wait for evidence. The OAS effectively supported the coup from the start and played a key role in energizing the political right in Bolivia, you know, basically giving them cover, political cover, effectively. You know, by giving credence to the idea that somehow Evo Morales somehow stole the election, which there's no evidence for. All evidence points to that he won fair and square. There's no evidence of fraud. As far as can be told, this this idea that that election was somehow stolen, somehow this the fascists and the right-wingers went berserk on the streets somehow for legitimate reasons because the election was stolen, that's nonsense. It's propaganda. And in an effort to, and this in itself is telling, in an effort to contain the fascist violence and lynch mob-style terrorism in the streets, you know, with people being attacked and killed and all this sort of stuff, you know, Evo Morales agreed. He actually agreed to a new round of elections, you know, just last weekend before he was forced to resign. He agreed for new elections. It's like, okay, you know, if the problem is, you know, you don't think this election was legitimate, okay, we're going to do it again. Start fresh. Do it again. You know, call my bluff. You know, he agreed to new elections. He agreed to those demands by the opposition. And only a few hours after he said he was open to new elections, he was overthrown by the military. You know, the same Bolivian military whose top officers were almost all trained in the United States, almost all trained at the notorious School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia, a U.S. Army installation where many of the most brutal death squads and torturers in Latin American history cut their teeth and got their start. You know, that's where these guys who overthrew Evo Morales came from. All of them were U.S. trained by the American military, maintained contact with the American military, and worked hand in glove with them. And almost certainly got orders from Washington to carry out this coup. And after he was forced to resign by the military, Evo Morales fled to Mexico, fearing the very real threat of assassination at the hands of the right-wing vigilantes and their backers in the police and military. And thus, the 47% of the population that voted for Evo Morales in the election had their votes stolen in just one blow. Just boom. Because the right wing wasn't interested in new elections. They wanted power. They wanted control. They wanted to overthrow this indigenous left-wing leader. And they wanted to do so for a very long time. You know, they believed that control of Bolivia was their right. And the idea of having an indigenous man, somebody who they viewed as inferior, in the presidential palace in La Paz was just intolerable to them. Especially when he was doing things like nationalizing natural gas and like the natural resources which they had controlled before, which the rich oligarchies and rich families had been controlling before, and then it was nationalized, put into the hands of the people. I mean, rich white oligarchs in Latin America don't forgive when you cut into their profits like that. Especially when it's indigenous people who are coming in and like trying to reclaim their land and their sovereignty and their self-determination. Evo Morales held power in Bolivia for 13 years. And some people on the left have criticized him for running for a fourth term in office just to begin with, even though the Bolivian Supreme Court ruled that he could do so legally. As Nick Estes notes, quote, "For our indigenous president, after 5 centuries of colonization, 13 years was not long enough." But Evo Morales, He recently told his supporters from exile in Mexico, he told his supporters, "We will come back." And he quoted the 18th century indigenous resistance leader who fought against the Spanish Empire. He said, quote, "And we will be millions," as Tupac Katari said. Bolivia's future, like that of Chile, where massive protests against a right-wing government and fascist police violence are also ongoing. Bolivia's future is in the streets, where the people continue to rise up against the brutal regime imposed on them by local capitalists, the Fortune 500, and their backers in Washington. For the indigenous people of Bolivia, you know, faced with this kind of racist, fascist violence, this is a battle for survival against a coup regime that is unconcerned about shedding indigenous blood, a racist coup regime. But the people will win. As Thomas Sankara, the African revolutionary Thomas Sankara, once said, "When the people stand up, imperialism trembles." And the people are standing up all across the world. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Vamos a cantar todo junto. Gracias. Vamos.
Ahora vamos a cantar todo.
Todo junto, por favor. Gracias. Muchas gracias.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I put on a couple of songs for you there. That was, first I did Mercedes Sosa's version of the iconic Latin American protest song that translates. It's entitled Solo Te Pido de Dios, and that's I Only Ask of God, is what that translates as. And then, of course, I played Victor Jara's another song by him called Manifesto. Once again, talking about the songs which he did, like, were the struggles of the working class and oppressed people of his native Chile. And, you know, many, of course, of whom were indigenous people. Mapuche, indigenous people and the like, you know, from who had suffered centuries of colonialism and were still struggling to survive, to fight back to gain some sort of sovereignty and control of their own lives. And just that's what's going on in Latin America right now. And one of the things I just want to mention here, one of the most moving moments in my life happened when I was in Washington, D.C. in 2015 with a delegation from the Communist Party of Canada, from the Latino community in Toronto, and an Indigenous delegation from Six Nations to take part in a protest action outside the World Bank in solidarity with the then government of Ecuador's legal efforts to make the oil giant Chevron pay for what it had done to the Ecuadorian Amazon and its indigenous inhabitants. And delegations came from all over North America, from across North America and South America as well, for this protest action. And in the course of the day's events, I saw an elder from Six Nations joining hands with Rigoberta Menchu, the great Guatemalan Mayan indigenous activist. And in that moment, I saw Turtle Island and the Land of the Condor come together in one place. And I'm sure that the people standing guard right now at the Unistoten camp in BC, they're praying for their brothers and sisters in Bolivia, who are also fighting, just as they are, to protect unceded indigenous lands and resisting genocide at the hands of the colonizers. And they understand their struggles are connected. You know, there are many ways that people resist oppression, brothers and sisters, and, you know, music and song are among the most powerful tools that oppressed people and their allies have. And I strove to be an ally this past weekend at the Guelph Poetry Slam, which of course I go to on a regular basis, when I sang a song that the Irish singer Christy Moore wrote in tribute to the great Victor Jara. And for those of you who weren't at the E-Bar on Saturday to see me do that, I'll be happy to perform it a second time for you here right now. But first, I want you to know a little bit more about who I'm talking about and why, in light of the protests in Chile and Bolivia, I felt the need to sing a song to educate people about this brave man, because going into this, I was sure that almost no one at the E-Bar that night would know who he was or be familiar with his music. Because for all our plastic slogans about multiculturalism, genuine internationalist education isn't a big thing in Canada. And we generally don't know that much about even, like, very, very big singers in places like Latin America and Latin American music scene, like Mercedes Sosa or Victor Jara, these kind of people. Like, we don't even know these people, even though they're incredibly famous in places like Chile and Argentina. But Victor Lidio Jara Martinez, born September 28th, 1932, and who died on September 16, 1973, was a Chilean teacher, theater director, poet, singer-songwriter, political activist, and member of the Communist Party of Chile. A distinguished theater director, he devoted himself to the development of Chilean theater, directing a broad array of works from locally produced Chilean plays to the classics of world stage, to the experimental work of Angelico. Simultaneously, he developed in the field of music and played a pivotal role among neo-folkloric artists who established the Nueva Chanson Chilena, New Chilean Song movement, which led to a revolution in the popular music of his country under the Salvador Allende government. And shortly after the Chilean coup of 11 September 1973, Victor Jara was arrested, tortured, and ultimately shot to death with 44 bullet shots by machine gun fire. And his body was later thrown out into the street of a shanty town in Santiago. The contrast between the themes of his songs on love, peace, and social justice, and the brutal way in which he was murdered, transformed Jara into a symbol of struggle for human rights and justice across Latin America. So that's who I was paying tribute to when I got up and sang on stage for the first time in my life on Saturday, the E-Bar. And this is the song I sang. It's called Victor Jara by Christy Moore. Victor Jara of Chile lived like a shooting star. He fought for the people of Chile with the songs on his guitar. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. When Victor was a peasant boy, barely 6 years old, when he sat upon his father's plow and watched the earth unfold, his hands were gentle and his hands were strong. When the neighbors had a wedding, or one of their children died, his mother sang all night for them with Victor by her side. Her hands were gentle and her hands were strong. He grew up to be a fighter, stood against what was wrong. He learned of people's grief and joy and turned it into song. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. He sang for the copper miners and those who farmed the land. When he sang for the factory workers, they knew Victor was their man. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. He campaigned for Allende, and he canvassed night and day, singing, take hold of your brother's hand, the future starts today. His hands were gentle, and his hands were strong. When Pinochet took Chile, they arrested Victor then. They caged him in the stadium with 5,000 frightened men. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. Victor picked up his guitar, his voice resounded strong. He sang for his comrades till the guards cut short his song. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. They broke the bones in both his hands, beat him on the head, tortured him with electric wires, then they shot him dead. His hands were gentle, and his hands were strong. Victor Jara of Chile lived like a shooting star. He fought for the people of Chile with the songs on his guitar. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. His hands were gentle and his hands were strong. That was a song Christine Moore did for Victor Jara. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Flor de fuego tiene paloma, un temblor de primaveras, palomita, y un volcán corre en tus venas, y mi sangre como brasa tiene paloma, en tu cuerpo quiero hundirme, palomita. hasta el fondo de tu sangre. El sol morirá, morirá. La noche vendrá, vendrá. Envuélvete en mi cariño, deja la vida volar. Tu boca junto a mi boca, paloma, palomita. Envuélvete en mi cariño, deja la vida volar. Tu boca junto a mi boca, paloma, palomita. Ay, ay, paloma, ay, ay, paloma. Llamarada mía, palomita, que ha calmado mil heridas. Ahora volemos libre, tierna paloma. No pierdas las esperanzas, palomita. La flor crece con el alma. Junto a mi boca, paloma, palomita, ay, envuélvete en mi cariño, deja la vida volar. Tu boca junto a mi boca, paloma, palomita, ay, ay, paloma, ay, ay, paloma.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Victor Jara with